Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 9th, 2016. I'm Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net today. Will Pruitt's in-person perspective on last night's WWE Raw via his pause review. And he feels that WWE was, once again, homophobic. And you can check out all the details on the main page, along with my full review of last night's WWE Raw, as well as the Stone Cold podcast interview with Dean Ambrose. We'll be talking a little bit about that in a moment. Plus a full rundown of the updated SummerSlam card, and we should have WWE Raw ratings and viewership info by the time you see this. Join Jake Barnett tonight for live coverage of WWE SmackDown. Non-members, when we come back from this break, we will discuss Dean Ambrose's appearance on the Stone Cold podcast. Okay, I did that full rundown of Dean Ambrose's appearance on the Stone Cold podcast last night, and kind of my quick take on things is that it was an interesting hour. I've heard from some fans who didn't care for it. I thought Ambrose came off like his character, and I think that's a good thing. He also managed to deliver a positive message without losing touch with that rebellious side of his persona. I didn't know what to expect from this, but I knew it would be a disaster if Ambrose just kind of went in there and just completely abandon his character. And I have a feeling that this is kind of a case of what you see is what you get with him. But just imagine if the guy you see on TV was completely different from the guy. It was basically like he just flipped a switch. And, he's an actor playing a role that would not have been good. So it was good to see that he came off the way he did. I do think it was a bit frustrating for Steve Austin as an interviewer. There were times when it felt like Austin was pretty frustrated by the answers he was getting, or maybe that he just wasn't able to get Ambrose to open up a little bit more. It definitely seemed like there was some tension at different points, and Austin typically tends to bond with his wrestling guests over road stories or common ground, even if he doesn't have a lot of history with them. But there were not as many of those moments with Ambrose. I don't think they have much of a connection. I mean, a little bit with they both like older country music, I think it was, and things like that. But aside, and obviously pro wrestling, but it just didn't seem like there was as much of a bond there between Austin and Ambrose. And I'm not sure if Ambrose was guarded because he was choosing his words carefully because he was representing WWE, or if it was just because that's his nature. But I got to say, I was never bored. Even though Ambrose, chose not to go into great detail about certain aspects of his life, I didn't have any problem with Austin challenging Ambrose to push the envelope and telling him that he feels like he's been resting on his laurels. I don't even really agree with Austin about the resting on the laurels as far as like just the work ethic is concerned, but I don't know that that's what he meant. I couldn't blame Ambrose, even though I didn't blame Austin for going there, for feeling a little bit maybe blindsided by that, because I'm sure this is a guy who feels like he's been working as hard as ever, and he's finally reached the top by becoming WWE champion. But hey, it's not uncommon for Austin to tell wrestlers to take more chances, to push that envelope. I'm not sure if he realizes or is willing to admit that things are so much more controlled now than they were during his heyday, and Ambrose, I think, kind of said that in his own way by saying he's playing in someone else's sandbox. But, Austin and Jim Ross both deliver that message a lot, and I think it's a good message, but I just don't know how much these guys can get away with now compared to when Jim Ross and Steve Austin were with the company. Now, that said, my best guess as to what Austin was talking about with the whole resting on your laurels line was that Ambrose tends to get a little too cute with the comedy at times. He hasn't been doing as much of that on SmackDown Live over the last 2 weeks, and I don't know how much Steve Austin is watching right now. But it's been a trap that Dean Ambrose kind of falls into, and I don't know coming out of the interview now, is that him or is it creative? Because he did talk about having more freedom on the mic these days than he had as he worked his way up. And Austin may have also simply been trying to send the message, and this is how Ambrose took it, that you can't take your foot off the gas pedal now that you've reached the top. I really hope Austin will kind of follow up on and help define what message he was trying to send, because it was a bit vague. And at the very least, I do hope that he took the time to convey that message to Ambrose off the air, because I think Ambrose heard resting on your laurels and kind of got a little bit defensive, even though he kind of came back with the part about, hey, yeah, good message. It inspires me. He admitted he took offense to that line. The most notable aspect of the interview had to be Ambrose venting about his WrestleMania match with Brock Lesnar. And he talked about how he had a lot of ideas and he couldn't get Brock Lesnar to do anything. He also used the word laziness at one point. He stopped just short of saying Brock is all about Brock. And for a guy who seems so guarded, I was surprised Ambrose went there. It left me wondering if this is just kind of typical Brock Lesnar or if it was because Brock wasn't happy about his slot at WrestleMania. It really did. You know, you can go back and we talked about it then. It kind of felt like Brock was the odd man out of the big matches at WrestleMania. And they never really made this match feel main event level. And you can say, well, some of that is, you know, Lesnar could have worked harder to make that happen. The match itself was kind of disappointing. It was underwhelming. But I don't know that they could have made that match feel on par as like one of the true main events of the show. Even if Lesnar had given his all to it, it just didn't have that pizzazz. Now, was Lesnar also, was he against doing a bunch of hardcore stuff? Did Ambrose come up with a lot of, I mean, keep in mind that, you know, they had Terry Funk and he was getting all these different weapons and all, and different things like that, Mick Foley. And so was Brock just like, I'm not doing a bunch of hardcore stuff. Or was he playing it safe because he knew he was about to start training for his UFC fight? I don't know if we're ever going to hear Brock Lesnar address this, but I am curious the next time Paul Heyman is interviewed if this comes up and what Heyman would have to say about this. I think that's more likely to occur than Brock Lesnar responding anytime soon. But, you know, hey, maybe with SummerSlam, Brock will end up granting an interview to somebody and it will come up. I certainly hope so. Up next, my WWE Raw hit list, as I like to do most Tuesdays. A lot of times we get so buried with things that I just end up not doing it. You can read the print version at ProWrestling.net. Stick around if you've already read it and you just want to skip ahead, you certainly can. Stick around for Raw bonus thoughts coming up after the hit list. We will start with the WWE Raw hits. Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton's video package is the first one. Brock Lesnar has no interest in standing in the middle of the ring and delivering a monologue-style promo. He doesn't want to take part in a scripted back-and-forth verbal exchange with other wrestlers. However, this segment once again showed how great he can be when he's featured in UFC-style sit-down interviews. I love that Lesnar is the one guy who's allowed to swear, albeit censored. It never comes off as tacky, like he's cussing just to get a cheap reaction. It makes it seem like he's going to say and do whatever he wants and that WWE can't control him, which is pretty much the case in real life, as we recently learned. Orton held up his end well, and I enjoyed the way they showed the historical footage of the duo from their Ohio Valley wrestling days. And a lot of fans grumbled about Orton being named Lesnar's next opponent, but I think WWE has won most of them over with the work they have done to create the big match feel. Next up, Enzo Amore, Big Cass, Chris Jericho, and Kevin Owens. Enzo continues to get Raw off to energetic starts. WWE fans love his promos and the channel-long aspects that he and Cass bring. Jericho and Owens are great foils for Enzo and Cass. Jericho loses me a bit by going for cute comedy bits, but I'm really enjoying the dynamic between these four. I can't remember the last time I was this excited about a WWE tag match that didn't involve the tag titles. The next hit is Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. Rollins delivered a good in-ring promo. He's not getting the type of heat that he once did, and I still strongly believe that WWE made a mistake by bringing him back as a heel when the fans wanted to cheer him. That said, I hope they stick with Balor as the babyface and avoid any temptation of reuniting him with Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. WWE needs fresh babyface stars. They missed the boat on Rollins when he returned, but I believe they can get Balor over as a top babyface on the Raw side. I would really like to see Rollins become the leader of the club. It would breathe some new life into his heel act, and they could get them off to a strong start by giving them all gold at SummerSlam. I'm surprised we are seeing Balor's demon persona so soon, but it's logical from his character standpoint since he's breaking it out for a world, or actually a universal championship match. The next hit is Braun Strowman against Jarrell Nelson. Another simple and effective squash win for Strowman. I'm not sure whether they're setting him up for Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns to slay, or whether he'll even be ready to hang in an upper card match, but I love the way he's been presented since the draft, and his new look is a big improvement. The final hit is Cesaro and Sheamus, a minor hit for a step forward in their program. It's going to be difficult to get two guys over at once, but the physicality of their matches and the popularity Cesaro has with some fans helps. The real challenge is making Sheamus mean something again. They put heat on him by having him cost Cesaro the U.S. Championship, and the key is the follow-up to this angle and whether Sheamus can start to generate consistent heat. By the way, I enjoyed the main event match between Rusev and Cesaro, but I wish WWE would work hard through the course of a three-hour show to make the U.S. title match feel main event worthy rather than hiding it from viewers until the end of the night. into the WWE Raw Misses section. We start with Rusev, Lana, and Roman Reigns. The wedding celebration was painful. It was as if WWE decided the best course of action to take was to bore the crowd to sleep and then introduce Roman Reigns in hopes that he might be cheered more. Rusev continued to be hysterical, but I also question whether that's the right approach to take with him. There was a time when a Brock Lesnar against Rusev match would have felt like a big money showdown. At this point, that match would feel like it's all about Lesnar because WWE hasn't done enough to protect Rusev's monster heel status. Up next is the Miss of Mick Foley and Daniel Bryan segment. There's no denying that Bryan was the most popular person in the building or that Foley is doing an effective job in his role as a general manager. I just don't see how this segment was enough to justify WWE breaking the roster split rules. I had no problem with Orton and Lesnar doing it because it was portrayed as the two of them breaking the rules. In this case, Foley invited Daniel Bryan to Raw for a conversation that their characters could have had on the telephone. I expected this to be bigger than it was, or at least serve a larger purpose than simply getting Daniel Bryan on the show. The one major positive of this was the way that Mick Foley stood up for the Universal Championship so passionately. The next miss is New Day, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. WWE shot a comedic video with Anderson and Gallows mocking the testicular injury they gave Big E the week before. They did this knowing that the other two New Day members were going to take part in a segment with Sean Combs that preceded the Anderson and Gallows skit, yet included the same type of nut jokes. It's impossible for Anderson and Gallows to get any type of heat for their spoof video when the babyfaces are making the same joke at their partner's expense. As much as I'm entertained by New Day's antics at times, I must continue to point out that they don't sell anything. Sure, Big E took the night off, but the other two were right back in comedy mode without a care in the world aside from a throwaway line about how they had to call Big E. The next miss is Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. A poor match that actually had a botched move in the opening seconds. Young got the better than expected reactions when he was feuding with the established heel Miz. The fans don't seem to care about him now that he's feuding with Titus, and yet another case of WWE booking two guys who need wins against one another. The fans at least react to Titus as a babyface. Why not flip the script so that Young and the crazed Backlund are heels? The next miss is Neville and Sin Cara against the Dudley Boys. When they set up the need for Neville to find a tag partner on the pre-show, I thought they might actually be going with Finn Balor. Instead, we got a guy who broke up with Kalisto because he didn't want to be a tag team wrestler anymore. Why isn't Neville on SmackDown where he could actually mean something? The only notable aspect of this match was that they seemed to go out of their way to show Bubba flashing a nasty look at D-Von afterward. Could this lead to a WWE takeoff on the Bully Ray character that Bubba played so well in TNA? If so, he also belongs on SmackDown. The final miss is Sasha Banks against Dana Brooke. The setup for this match was strange, with Sasha asking for a handicap match and then Mick Foley booking her with a stipulation that would give her what she asked for if she lost the match. Why wouldn't Foley just ban Brooke from ringside at SummerSlam? At the very least, why wouldn't Sasha simply make that request? The match was over before it started, and it didn't get me more excited about Banks versus Charlotte at SummerSlam. Now we get into the WWE Raw bonus thoughts. First, though, I do want to tell you that .NET members are listening to my full audio review of WWE Raw, as well as my Q&A audio show. Those shows are both from Monday. You can join us on the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net and listen to our entire library of audio by becoming a member. Visit the main page of ProWrestling.net. Once you are in there, you will see the sign-up area. Once you get inside the sign-up area, you're going to find three different pricing options. Membership rates start at $7.50 for 1 month, but the longer you commit, the more you save. If you get, there's a 6 month option, but if you want to get the most bang for your buck, take the annual option and you whittle that price down to an average of just $5.50 per month. If you ever have any questions on that, hit me up on Twitter at Pro Wrestling Net or shoot me an email at dotnetjason@gmail.com. dotnetjason@gmail.com. Now for those Raw bonus thoughts. We're 3 weeks now into the post-draft new era of Raw, and the first show was clearly the highlight, and that's to be expected, given that they wanted to send the message of change, and they really did a lot of hot-shotting. I did not expect them to try to match that show, because it would have been counterproductive to hot-shot like that every week. You just can't do it. But I was hopeful that they had enough of an outline there with that show that there was going to be some real change. I already feel like Raw is slipping back into its old formula. We're getting the needlessly long promos and some short throwaway matches, like the women's match and Titus and Young. And as much as I disliked the first SmackDown after the draft, last week's SmackDown was actually better than the two Raw shows that we've seen since that new era premiere, if you will. I also want to know, are we already at the point where Vince McMahon can't be bothered to book anything for SmackDown until Tuesday? We saw generic ads for SmackDown throughout Raw that sold us on nothing other than anything can happen on SmackDown. It just tells me that, yeah, anything can happen because you haven't booked the damn show yet. And then you also had Mick Foley cutting off Daniel Bryan's plug late in the show. Now, you could say, well, it's, you know, Mick doesn't, the Raw GM doesn't want the SmackDown GM to use his property and blah, 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 blah. I think if there was something good to plug, you would have heard it, and then Mick would have been trying to cut him off, that sort of a thing. Vince is just his own worst enemy in this regard. It doesn't mean that SmackDown can't be a good show tonight, but it does mean that they failed to promote SmackDown in a meaningful way on their flagship show to that show's audience. I just think it's a huge mistake. I mentioned in the hit list that WWE hid the main event rather than promote it throughout the show. They have 3 hours to work with. You can't tell me that there's no way to build up a U.S. title match throughout the course of the show and make it feel like a big deal. Take the time to have Cesaro tell us what winning the championship would mean to him. Sell us on the possibility that this is his night. Let the audience feel Cesaro's disappointment when Sheamus interferes. It makes the U.S. title more important, it makes Rusev bigger, and it puts real heat on Sheamus for interfering and costing Cesaro something that he valued so much. I just don't get it. But all of that said, SummerSlam is shaping up to be a good show. It looks like a very good show on paper. And I think we're in for a really fun weekend with the Ring of Honor pay-per-view on Friday night, NXT TakeOver on Saturday night, and SummerSlam closing that weekend on Sunday. I think Lesnar and Orton does have a big match feel. I don't think there's a bad match advertised on the SummerSlam card thus far. And you know, the television product is still kind of up and down. But SummerSlam does feel like a can't-miss show just based on looking at that lineup. I think they need to start emphasizing just how strong that lineup is, even though they do, you know, it's this whole split brand thing. Well, for this show, they're coming together, so they both need to start making a big fuss over this and not just advertising their own matches and Lesnar and Orton, because I think that's the selling point. It hasn't been the TV. It's just been, wow, look at this lineup. This is pretty damn impressive. Hey, finally today, please remember to subscribe to this daily podcast. Take a moment and please rate and review us on iTunes. It's always appreciated because you are helping spread the word about this podcast and ProWrestling.net. And when I put out the link to this or any other episode, even just a simple retweet helps spread the word. And a big thanks to everyone who has already taken the time to do one of those things. And that is it for today. I will most likely be back in this same slot tomorrow. So until then, take care.